This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the MVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Google Trends expert Justin Bird joins me to break down the top five search trends on Google this week. Thanks for joining me, Justin.
Hey, always a pleasure.
For Google Trends this week, what is number five?
Number five was dumpster fire. So Merriam-Webster added 850 words and definitions to the dictionary this past week. And for some reason, dumpster fire is getting a ton of attention. Search interest spiked for them, for dumpster fire by 3,200% this past week. But some of the other words in there, I feel like, are just as exciting. Mansplain, glamping, embiggen, which this one is super interesting because The Simpsons literally created this word. Apparently they used it on an episode way back when, and now it's literally a real word. Also, the one that got me the most excited was whelp, because whelp is such a good word, and I'm surprised that it wasn't in there already. But yeah, 850 words in there, dumpster fire, everybody's stoked up on that. And if you're wondering about the actual definition of dumpster fire, it's an utterly calamitous or mismanaged situation or a current disaster.
How do they decide what gets thrown in? I mean, is there like a whole list of words and like, oh, only these 10?
Yeah, they have an elite council of elders that go around and vote. No, I have no idea. I don't know. I would assume there's some sort of data-backed analysis that they use based on like prevalence of the word. And I don't know. I don't know how they decide it, but that's an interesting question.
You know what? What they do is they troll through the Urban Dictionary and they're like, this looks good. This looks good.
Yeah. They're like, well, this word is awesome. Let's do this one. Hopefully it's that fun and silly of a process.
Yeah, I hope it is. So what was number four?
Number four was M&M's. So that's trending this week because they're coming out with three new flavors, Crunchy Espresso, Crunchy Raspberry, and Crunchy Mint. They're all crunchy and they're going to hit the shelves on April 1st. And they're going to be around until May 25th, but limited time because you got to vote for your favorite. They're doing like some sort of fan favorite flavor competition. And then everybody gets to try them. You can vote online. And then coming out in August, they're going to reveal the actual flavor that whoever won the actual flavor vote. So you can vote at flavorvote.mms.com. But you got to go out there and try the flavors. I mean, I already know that I'm not going to like any of them because I'm a peanut M&M guy through and through, and I don't know why they're trying to fix something that isn't broke. So hopefully they have like a write-in section for the flavor vote, and I'm just going to write M&M's. Like, stop coming out with anything else because that's best.
Hey, did they make any new like characters for them? Like give it a really famous voice actor for any of these or no, not yet?
Man, that's a good question. I don't think just yet. I haven't seen anything for it, but they are. Yeah, I would like to see the characters. Their commercials are really good. They really embody, they really like personify the brand and the candy, which is fun. But I haven't seen that just yet. But they've been doing the Flavor Vote campaign for a while.
Oh, wow.
I guess, well, just a couple years. They launched it in 2016 for the 75th anniversary. And Coffee Nut was the winner in that first one and had more than a million votes. More than a million people cared to sign on online and vote for a candy flavor. So they're going to get some traction. We'll see. It's going to be a tight race.
Well, I hope whatever M&M wins, that it's Chris Pratt. He gets to voice it. I think that'll be funny.
That is a good one. Okay, I vote for that as well.
What was number three?
So this one is Amelia Earhart. This is awesome. So there's been a new development in kind of the cold case of Amelia Earhart's disappearance. And, you know, just to jog everybody's memory, she was the first woman to fly across the Atlantic, but then she vanished into thin air during her flight around the world in 1937. So there are a couple theories out there. One, she just ran out of fuel and crashed in somewhere in the Pacific Ocean. One is that she survived but was taken prisoner by Japanese forces who were expanding their reach in the region leading up to World War II. And that one got some traction last year when they found this photo and she appeared to be in the background somewhere in Japan. But I don't know, that argument's a little bit tough because it's really hard to see her and I don't know. It's a blurry photo. But now this newest theory is getting traction where she crashed on, I'm going to mess up the name of the island, Nikmaroro, whatever. I messed that up. But it's some island 400 miles south of Howland. And they think that that was a result of some sort of a navigation error. But they found these bones way back in 1940, and they thought it was hers. And so this guy, this doctor, analyzed the bones. Nah, wasn't her. He threw the bones away, but he did take measurements of the bones. So now this new guy, Richard Jantz, who's affiliated with the University of Tennessee, reexamined the bone data from 1940 and ran it through this simulator system that he developed that has been used by all these different forensic scientists. And he determined that they were her bones. But again, you got to take it with a grain of salt because we're using measurements from 1940. We don't even have the bones anymore, but they think it's her bones. And so that is a huge advancement in the disappearance of Amelia Earhart.
Man, there are so many conspiracy theories about what happened to her that, you know, the Bermuda Triangle just ate her up. Or I shouldn't say it's my favorite one, but it's the most gruesome, where she landed on an island with cannibals and that's what happened to her.
That's pretty wild. Yeah,
I know. Like, they get pretty weird.
Celebrated, but crazy. Yeah, that's super cool. All right. Well, who knows? I mean, really, we don't know. We're not going to ever know. I think that even this theory is the one that's been gaining a lot of traction on Google this week. I don't know. Seems a little bit fishy still. So, I mean, it's probably the cannibal one, I would assume.
Well, no evidence, right? So yeah. What was number two?
So number two was inclusion writer. So over the past weekend on Sunday during the Oscars, when Frances McDormand won Best Actress for her role in Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri, she gave an awesome speech, and it was empowering, and it was cool, and she had kind of a weird manic laugh at times, which was entertaining. But she ended her speech with two words: inclusion writer. And even when I was watching, I was like, okay, I thought she was going to say, you know, maybe something like Time's Up or Me Too, because she really built up these last two words, and she said inclusion writer, and everybody was like, what, come again, what's that? So everybody obviously turned to Google to figure out what the heck an inclusion writer is, and so search interest spiked in that pretty significantly. So essentially, an inclusion writer, that's R-I-D-E-R, not writer as in writing something. It's a clause that can be added to an actor's employment contract to ensure gender and racial diversity in the cast and crew. So, relatively unknown term to a large population. So she was bringing a lot of light to that. So everybody was searching for that. There was actually a lot of search interest in inclusion writer, as in W-R-I-T-E-R, which was incorrect. It is inclusion writer.
Don't musicians have writers? Like, they'll say, hey, if this venue wants me, they're going to have to give me, like, all green M&Ms.
Or maybe crunchy mint M&Ms if it wins the fan vote. I don't know. I'm sure that they have weird demands like that, for sure. But it also seems like an inclusion writer seems like it should be pretty standard. It's like, oh, all right, well, Francis wants us to make the set or the cast diverse. I guess we got to recast everybody. It seems like they should kind of do that in the first place.
Like, you would think that's kind of like okay, you put your socks on. it's like you put your hat on, you put your coat on. I don't have to tell you these things.
Exactly. I know. It seems like it should be standard process. Also, kind of related but unrelated, Frances McDormand, she had her Oscar stolen at the Governor's Ball after party by this dude, Terry Bryant. Yeah, he stole it, ran around, told everybody that he had actually won the Oscar. And then he got arrested, and he's facing a felony grand theft. He could face 3 years in prison for just running around and telling people that he won an Oscar. So probably not the smartest thing to do, Terry.
Wow. Yeah, that was not smart at all. But I have to say, I probably would have done the same thing. Like, this is mine. Mason Vera Payne got one, too.
I'd like to thank my parents. I know. It would be fun. But it's like, man, grab the shampoo bottle in the shower and practice. You don't face any jail time for that.
Well, that's what you do.
Is that what everybody does?
What was number one?
International Women's Day. So that was yesterday. And it was great. There was a wild outpouring of support for gender equality, and all these different companies were hopping on trying to do various things to celebrate the day. So McDonald's turned their M upside down. The Mattel introduced some new dolls that were celebrating a series of Barbies geared towards inspiring women. And the Eiffel Tower lit up with, I'm not even going to try to say the French words, but it translates into English as Now We Act, which is essentially the French equivalent of Time's Up. And yeah, it was great. Always an exciting day. And it certainly got a lot of search interest on Google. People were actually trying to figure out, like, you know, what was the impetus behind International Women's Day. And it can kind of be traced back to New York City in 1908, when thousands of women that were garment workers, they went on strike and marched through the city to protest equal working conditions.
Oh, wow. That's so funny. How, man, I feel like I'm very uncultured right now because I didn't even know it was a day.
And that's why you have me on your show, to educate you.
Oh, thank you so much, Justin. One more thing to find out. What was the number one trending YouTube video?
Yeah, this was Terrence Cunningham on The Voice singing My Girl. And it really is something to watch. You got to check it out. So this guy, Terrence Cunningham, he's the nephew of this legendary blues guitarist, Etta Baker, but obviously he's relatively unknown, which is why he's going on The Voice. But all the judges turned around basically after the very first line. The guy's got the silkiest, smoothest voice. He really just did a beautiful rendition of My Girl, and he is now going to be coached by Alicia Keys. And everybody, man, all the coaches were just salivating over him. They're like, man, we want you on my team. You're so good. Everybody was freaking out, but yeah, gorgeous singing by Terrence Cunningham.
It was. I actually watched that video, and My Girl is such a poppy song. Then the way he did it was so unique. It was slow. It kind of melted into it, and it was a really good video. I liked it a lot.
I totally agree. Yeah, he said this rendition was inspired by his daughter, because he put his music career on hold to get her through high school and off to college, and she's now 20 years old, and so he sang that song from inspiration from his young daughter.
Wait, so how old is he? He looks so young.
He's 36. He had her when he was 16.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So he was like, okay, well, I got to focus on being the best father that I can be to her. I've got to kind of put my music career on hold until I can get her grown up, and then I can hop back into music. So yeah, he's only 36.
Oh, wow. Well, good for him. I hope he goes far on The Voice. Well, Justin, thanks so much for coming on. I appreciate you being here.
Hey, you're welcome. Always a pleasure.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapaine.com. That's masonverapaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.